Now, PW Torch brings you the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show. It's time to talk this week's WWE Monday Night Raw.
Well, Jason, I think I have an idea on how to solve this dilemma that Raw ended with. I'm going to suggest something crazy. A match between Seth Rollins and Finn Balor. What do you think of my idea?
I have to say, Wade, you're going pretty controversial right at the start. We've never seen something like that before, so you're really throwing something that's really wild out there. I don't know, Wade. You're really going out on a limb there, I have to say.
Do you have an alternate scenario? Maybe both should be eliminated, both should be included, we should just cancel WrestleMania. I really think the most reasonable option is to have them wrestle each other.
You know what? Why don't they just have the match again? Include them all. And you know what? Because John Cena might not even make it to WrestleMania, I think we should just add the whole roster in and make it a 58-man battle royal and see who earns the right. Because we want to make sure there's no stone that's left unturned, really.
That is true. That is very true. We have a lot to talk about from this week's episode of Monday Night Raw, tonight's episode that just ended a couple moments ago. It is the Monday, February 12th edition of the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show. And we are live recording our caller session here. So if you're listening to our live stream and want to participate in the show, please call our phone number, 347-215-8558. That's 347-215-8558. If you have called in, as many of you have on the switchboard, and want to participate in the show, you must push 1 on your touchtone phone to raise your hand, essentially, so we can bring you onto the program for your comments on this week's program or a question for me and today's co-host, who is Jason from Australia. He is a veteran caller of this program, and by popular demand, during our stretch of time when we were not taking calls for 6 months, people said, we want to hear from Jason. And so Jason has been a co-host on the show a handful of times, and this is another one of those times. Jason, thank you so much for taking time to join us. You're calling, in Australia right now. What time is it in Australia when you're watching Raw?
Well, on the West Coast, right now it's 12:15, obviously in the afternoon. So here in Perth, and we've had quite a few things happening in Perth, we can get to that. But, the show starts at about 9 o'clock in the morning, goes through to 12. So, yeah, we're looking at about 12:15 right now here on the West Coast.
All right, cool. So you get to watch Raw in the morning while the rest of, while America, the United States of America, North America, watches Raw in the evening. So we've got so many talking points from today's show, but we'll just start with the main event and explore this a little bit more, and then we'll get to calls. We did not, as of now, hear back from our on-site correspondent. We're hoping to do so, but we might end up not having that segment on this show, but that'll just give us more time to discuss the show and then also take emails, because we've got a full inbox. If you are listening to the live stream and do not want to participate on a phone call, but do have a question or comment, our email address, and this applies to everybody listening for SmackDown tomorrow and all future editions around SmackDown, email us during the show, WadeKellerPodcast@pwtorch.com. That's WadeKellerPodcast@pwtorch.com. Jason, the main event, we had the segment earlier in the show to include Seth Rollins being a participant in the match. Your take on the way that played out, with Seth being frustrated with his partner, Jason Jordan, being injured. He had neck surgery. He's out until past WrestleMania, according to Kurt Angle. Not distraught, but certainly an emotional Kurt Angle, playing up that Jason's his son. And Seth came out and just said, you know, he doesn't want to be just another guy on Raw. He wants to be the guy. He doesn't want this WrestleMania opportunity to go away. He had a knee injury once that did cost him that opportunity to be in WrestleMania. He talked his way into being in this, what was a fatal four-way match, turning it into a fatal five-way match against Finn Balor, Matt Hardy, Apollo Crews, and Bray Wyatt. Jason, what did you think of that segment, how both Seth and Kurt came across?
I think there's plenty to dissect here. First of all, Kurt sort of blurring the lines between reality with Jason Jordan, you know, people cheering Jason Jordan not being able to make WrestleMania, which is a bit cruel when you think about it, because Jason Jordan, the actual person behind the character, can't make it, but then they're more cheering about his character, which I think says a lot to how Jason Jordan has portrayed this character. I think the people aren't cheering the person behind the character missing out, but more the character. But then Kurt sort of coming in saying, you know, you really shouldn't be doing that because this is for real. Yet he is my son, which isn't. So there's a lot of blurring the line between reality and fiction, and I'm not sure how the fans were meant to take it. As far as Seth Rollins is concerned, you know, Wade, you often talk about babyfaces needing a real mission statement and what they're about, and I thought Seth Rollins really laid it out well. I've been a big fan of his character development over the past, say, you know, just, you know, over the past, say, 10 months or so, when he sort of put Bray Wyatt behind him and resisted the temptation to go back to evil. I like the way that he built himself up to Dean Ambrose to earn the trust of Ambrose and the fans again, as well as Reigns. He was involved in great matches with the Bar. Like you said, though, his character was sort of borderline getting not really understandable in his anger towards Jason Jordan. It was almost coming across like he was the jerk. But I thought he pulled that all back in. And by the time he was finished with the segment with Kurt Angle, the way that he laid it out, I said to myself, you know what? You know, Seth Rollins, he does deserve an opportunity. He is a crowd favorite. And I've always thought if he was the babyface that they got behind besides Roman Reigns, I always thought there was a lot of money in Seth. And you saw that firsthand, you know, a few years ago when he made that comeback against Reigns at Extreme Rules. So I like the way it played out. And I like the fact that Seth Rollins is back in the main event mix because I believe that's where he belongs.
Now, let's look ahead to sarcasm aside, Seth versus Finn Balor likely being a match, likely next week on Raw, to enter the Elimination Chamber. I understand they had something going on with Seth and Jason Jordan, and now that's off the table. Could this end up costing Finn Balor his chance to be in the Elimination Chamber if they decide they got to get Seth in that match because of the intrigue of him in that dynamic more than Finn Balor? I haven't had time to really think this all through, but what do you think is the result? Does Finn Balor still end up in the chamber and this is a setback for Seth? They can't add another chamber because then they'd have to do like a five-sided ring. Maybe they can add two people to the chamber and borrow TNA's ring and create a whole new structure. But yeah, where do you think we're headed with this, Jason?
It's hard to say because with Rollins, they still have that storyline, well, almost the beginning of a storyline that they haven't really tied a bow over. And it was the Raw before the Raw 25 when Rollins gave the stomp to Finn Balor, and Finn Balor really sold like he was knocked out. So I don't know if they go back to that and they draw upon that. It's a tough one because if you put Balor in there, I mean, obviously we all assume Reigns is the one that's going over. You know, there's been rumors that we might see a Balor mismatch for the IC title, which I think is an appropriate matchup for both of them. You put Rollins in there. I think whatever happens in the chamber, we're going to get a few storylines coming out of it, whether it's Cena, maybe The Undertaker interferes and, you know, something goes wrong with Cena. You know, Cena talked about how much it means to win the chamber and that he actually guaranteed that he was going to win. And we know that, you know, top babyfaces, McMahon doesn't like his top babyfaces to say that unless they're going to win. You know, you've also got Braun Strowman, what they're going to do with him. I actually don't know, and you know, I'm not really sure they know because I think that sort of booked himself into a bit of a corner here, but hopefully, whatever comes out of it, we get some intriguing storylines and matchups for WrestleMania. But you're right, Wade, it's a tough one.
It is, yeah. I mean, there's so many things coming out of tonight's Raw just regarding the main event scene and a decent number of other things also to talk about, including the Ronda Rousey announcement and others. But sticking with the Elimination Chamber, just for a moment here, if Seth makes it in, I'm trying to figure out what the storyline or feud is for him coming out of it. Do they go with Seth versus Elias? Like, do they shift to that? Is that a feud worthy of Seth Rollins at WrestleMania, Jason, if they end up doing John Cena versus Undertaker, which Cena hinted at tonight, and Roman Reigns goes on to fight Lesnar, and then, you know, what, Braun versus Miz or something? I don't know. I mean, is that a realistic scenario? What is your most likely scenario, even if you're not sure they even know, much less you?
Probably, like you said, maybe Elias versus Seth, but that's just like order of elimination. I mean, you would think Elias needs to have someone pretty high up to feud with, given the push that he's gotten. as well as Seth. You know, maybe Seth eliminates Elias and he comes back and costs Seth. But that's assuming Seth actually makes it to the chamber. Perhaps, you know, Finn Balor is the one that wins. So I don't know. Look, to be honest, you know, I, like everyone else, like to play things out and see where they head in a few weeks' time. But on this one here, I'm going to take a wait-and-see approach because there are numerous avenues they could go with. But I guess for you, Wade, if you had to pick, all right, I'm either putting over Finn Balor next week or Seth Rollins, who would you pick?
I think Finn Balor deserves to be in that match, and I think it can work against Seth, and it would be no fault of his own. And I don't think this is like a real big deal, but it can look bad if Finn gets bumped from the match, but Apollo Crews is still in it. You know, like, but Matt Hardy is still in it. Like, if you have, well, let me, I'm kind of getting my two matches. I'm getting all.
It's easy
all
to
the,
do.
That's the thing. It is. No, you're totally right. If Seth ends up in the match and Finn Balor is not part of the match, but Elias is still in it and Miz is still in it, I think people understand Strowman, Reigns, and Cena a lot. I think there'll be a little bit of resentment over just the booking, and that could backlash against Seth. You know, he's kind of he just sort of talked his way into a match that, you know, maybe he didn't deserve. Now, that might be a storyline, but I also think fans talking on the other side of my own argument is they might be understanding, hey, Jordan got injured. This was an audible. As long as in the end something important goes on with Finn Balor that fans are happy with, I think they'd be okay with Seth being in the match. It is an interesting scenario. I don't think they can add an extra person to the match. They went off the air saying, you know, confused over it. You know, somebody has to win, but there's two winners, and acting like this was this, you know, dilemma. And I guess there is a possibility they'll just say they both earned a spot in the chamber, and they'll start off with three people at the start of the match instead of two. And then, you know, and then people would leave the chambers afterwards or something like that. I guess they could, I think they could find a way to expand the chamber if they just did want to add somebody else to the match.
You're right. They could start with three. You're absolutely right. So you start with Miz, Rollins, and Balor. They could do that. Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, and it would be fair for those two to have to start with Miz as opposed to getting to come in later because they're the last ones to qualify. So anyway, it's we'll see what they do. All right, let's go to a phone call. Just a reminder, you can give us a call, 347-215-8558. We'll be here tomorrow night also. I'll be joined by PW Torch columnist Greg Parks live as soon as SmackDown ends. So if you're listening to this on delay on Tuesday, you can participate and talk to us and give your point of view as soon as SmackDown ends just by going to WadeKellerPodcast.com. Let's go to area code 251. 251, please state your name and the city you're calling from.
This is Kenny from Mobile, Alabama.
Hey, Kenny, thanks for calling. What have you got for Jason and me?
Yeah, y'all talked about it a little bit earlier. I just want to get y'all's opinion. With the Jason Jordan injury, how much do you think it's shaking up the WrestleMania card? You know, like, I'm fine with Seth getting into the chamber, and I would be okay with him winning it and fighting Lesnar. I mean, I know the likelihood of that is very slim, but if Reigns doesn't go over for some reason, I mean, who do you see being the, I guess, the backup plan if Reigns doesn't win?
Well, I, Jason, I talked with Bruce Mitchell about this on the VIP Bruce Mitchell audio show this weekend about, you know, is there an alternate scenario? And I think Reigns, Braun Strowman being in the match against Brock Lesnar, I think there's interest in seeing those two one-on-one. And Braun Strowman is more over as a babyface by, I think, most metrics that we're able to decipher and observe than Roman Reigns at this point. But it does feel like, you know, this has been a couple-year journey, and for Vince to abandon it, to go a different direction with Roman would... I mean, I'm not saying I'm against that. I'm against it, but it would be second guessed. You know, man, you just had this one more step to take, and maybe it would have worked. And instead, he panicked at the very end and gave the push to Bret Hart instead of Lexus. I'm sorry, gave the push to Braun Strowman instead of Roman Reigns. And maybe it would work out great because it would give Braun a ton of momentum. But he seems like the other candidate. They did tell the story, and I know we've got an email on this. But they tried to tell the story of John Cena being a guy who fans should be looking at as someone who could win the chamber and go on to face Brock. And I applaud that. I didn't love everything about what Cena said, but I and we'll get into that, I think, later. But I really like that they gave in the main event match on Raw and then in the Chamber match, they're giving stories out that fans can believe in, or at least the wrestlers are selling themselves as potential winners. We had that throughout the show tonight with everybody involved in the Fatal 5-Way match, making a case that they could win and in a way that a winner would say. And now we have that with the Chamber, a believable lineup. Now, I don't think Elias is at that point, but let's not be crazy. But even Miz made his case, and I thought it was really smart. If you're going to be in that match and you're going to have a chance to win and take on Lesnar, storyline-wise, make your case. And Miz did that. Now, I don't buy for a second that they're going to have Miz against Lesnar at WrestleMania, but I like that Miz made his case for himself, which is, I will go places that others against Lesnar have not gone. I will not play into his hands. I will dictate the style of match. And essentially he was saying, I'll cheat in ways that others haven't to take down the Beast. So to answer your question, I mean, I think Braun Strowman is the only other really logical avenue to go down, but I can't rule out John Cena, Finn Balor. I can rule out Seth Rollins almost. You know, I mean, like, it's a less than 1% chance of Seth ending up in the Chamber and winning. I think that would be that would not be a strong match given how Seth has been pushed and given the background with Seth and Brock. Jason, any reaction to any of that?
No, I agree with what you say. And I think, you know, I really like when all the wrestlers come out and they all state their case as to why they're going to win. And they mention Brock Lesnar by name. And this is reminiscent to me of the booking that they did leading up to the Royal Rumble last year. If you remember the Royal Rumble last year, there are about 8 or 10 guys that really laid down a good case as to why they were going to win the Royal Rumble. And it led to that Royal Rumble being very, very exciting. This year's Royal Rumble, we didn't see that. Hardly anyone was really putting a case for. There's only about 3 or 4 guys. But what we're seeing with the Elimination Chamber, everyone's coming out stating their case. And I think when fans have about, you know, 3 to 4 or 5 guys that they're thinking that they can lay a realistic claim as to why they might do it, even if they convince themselves it could happen, it makes for a more exciting event. But to answer Kenny's question, I think it has thrown a spanner in the works as far as Seth Rollins is concerned. You know, I'm high on Seth Rollins as a main event talent, so I want to be careful not putting him in situations where they sort of damage him from a main event point of view. But I don't see him going on to face Brock Lesnar at WrestleMania. And if it's not Roman Reigns versus Brock Lesnar and Vince backs out again, it's almost reminiscent of, you know, 3 years ago when at the last sec, you know, they decided that Seth Rollins was going to cash in. And I remember that WrestleMania. If you go back and watch that WrestleMania waiting, Kenny, where Brock Lesnar took on Roman Reigns was getting over in that match. Brock Lesnar was taking him apart, but Reigns had a smile on him, and he was saying, come at me more, come at me more. He was showing signs of that Samoan badass, and that was getting over. And then it almost got all flushed down the drain when Seth Rollins came in and took his moment away. So I think the safe bet is Roman Reigns versus Brock Lesnar. But the booking, the way they've done it, numerous people can have an opportunity. I like that from a fan's point of view.
I do too. I like that we can sit here and come up with several different viable WrestleMania scenarios. And you know, some of them are, you know, I think we can narrow it down in our minds to, you know, 2 or 3 that we can even think are plausible. But I think, you know, the more casual observer of WWE, they're even less sure. Of what's going to happen. And that's a good thing. You know, I mean, as long as in the end you don't just do something for the sake of surprising people, that you end up doing something that makes business sense. And I think there's several things that can make business sense that they could do to make this all work. So, yeah, it's fun. Kenny, any response to what Jason and I have been saying?
Yeah, brought up some really interesting points, and I appreciate you taking my call. The only other question I had was the Women's Elimination Chamber. Who do you think's coming out of that as the winner? And with Nia fighting Asuka and Ronda signing, if y'all can go into more detail, what you think's going to happen with all that scenario? And I appreciate y'all taking my call.
All right, that's a good topic. Jason, let's cut to our first break, and let's come back and talk about the women. We have not only the Ronda Rousey signing news and Kenny's question, which is having to do with the Women's Elimination Chamber match, and so we can kind of look at that scenario, but also the Asuka Nia Jax match, and then this Nia Jax video that WWE debuted or aired tonight. A lot of talking points regarding the women. So we'll cover that when we come back. I also, as the show progresses, want to talk about Braun Strowman and the bass cello and a different side of Braun Strowman that the Raw audience has not seen yet. Social media audience and the Mixed Match Challenge audience have maybe seen an aspect of this, but not the Raw audience. So I'm very curious for your take and to explore this a little bit more. If you want to get on the phone banks, the number is 347-215-8558. If you want to be on the show, you've got to push 1 on your touchtone phone in order to become eligible to join us on the program. So if you're listening in and want to participate, push 1. We'll be back right after this brief break. All right, we are back. I'm Wade Keller, joined by Jason from Australia. Got two topics on the table I want to cover in this segment for sure. Kenny, our caller, asked about the women's situation. Let's just get this out of the way. I thought that Asuka video was tremendous, Jason. I love sports statistics being incorporated into wrestling in a way that makes sense. I don't like WWE math, you know, where, oh, it's a four-way, so everybody has a 25% chance to win. That's insulting and silly. But I do like talking about when somebody arrives, how many matches they had. And then they threw these other stats out. How many opponents? How many different continents and countries she's won in? How many of them were former champions? This was a really well-done video. It made Asuka out to be a star. And with the money they're spending on Ronda Rousey, whatever it is, WWE right now is in the women's star-making business. They need star opponents who are credible to take on Rousey. And Asuka is as good as it gets with her statistics, her ability to have a great match, how different she comes across just in terms of her persona and her look. But this video was a really good compliment to what she's been doing inside the ring, beating everybody they throw at her and her promos. So I was high on the video. I'm curious what you thought.
Oh, I thought it was well done as well. I mean, that's the people, fans, we all love those Royal Rumble type videos where they do the stats, they do the minutes and all the rest of it. It really gets you excited. The more they do of that, the better it's going to be. And it just goes to show, Wade, that they internally do believe that wins and losses matter, that stats are important. We as fans, you know, we criticize them when they don't refer to that. They did do it tonight. And I'm also starting to notice, and I think you brought this up last week, starting to reference more of the past, starting to reference the you know, the background between Sheamus and Roman Reigns, how Sheamus did cash in on Roman Reigns a few years ago. Seth Rollins talking about what he did a few years ago. The more that they can reward longtime viewers with these type of stats and these happenings, so people think, oh, yeah, I remember that. Geez, that was important at the time. It's going to build up a lot of goodwill, and it's going to build up a lot of equity as well.
It is, and this is a good use of WWE's production strengths. Somebody asked me, you know, if I pinpoint things that, and we've had a lot to work with the last couple of weeks, production-wise, that I don't like about what WWE is doing. When they shine, when they apply their skills and their budget to the right approach, it really works. And this was an example of WWE doing some of their best work. And we've seen it in a lot of video packages before, but this absolutely was on the high end of what they do. The what I would not say is on the high end of what they do is the Ronda Rousey announcement. Kurt Angle, just as a quick little aside before I get to the Jason Jordan injury. Oh, by the way, next week, or at the Elimination Chamber, 2 weeks, excuse me, Ronda Rousey will be there to sign her Monday Night Raw contract. Now, I'm sorry, but that's a really big deal. Like, if you're paying Ronda Rousey big money, and she is being signed by Raw, not SmackDown. Granted, Jason, we kind of knew that was going to happen, or, you know, figured. We'd have been really surprised if SmackDown got Rousey.
Well, but then it rules out her match with Charlotte, really, unless they swap brands, because I was just assuming, you know, Rousey and Charlotte somewhere down the line.
Well, no, I think it will be somewhere down the line. I think it'll probably be post-Superstar shakeup one way or the other. But the idea of signing Ronda Rousey and having her on SmackDown instead of Raw, unfortunately, because SmackDown is perceived as a B brand, I think people just thought, well, it's a foregone conclusion. Whatever it means to her matches and storylines, she'll end up on Raw. And that's what we have. Now, she can't wrestle. Well, she can, but it's not set up right now for her to wrestle Asuka. That's not the path that everybody's on right now with the women's Elimination Chamber match. And it would also, you know, I talk about maybe people resenting Seth for taking Finn's spot or somebody else's spot in the chamber. I think people would resent Rousey if she ended up in the chamber and won, and because I think people would think, wait, everybody else earned that spot. So, yeah, but here,
but now you're right. Did you hear the boos? I mean, there were some scatter boos tonight there, Wade. And with the social media and the women coming out about her just stealing the moment from Asuka and stealing it from all the women, I'm not sure there's going to be – I think there's a resentment already there.
And that's exactly where I was headed, and you're totally right.
Oh, sorry.
No, I mean, Kurt Angle announcing next at Elimination Chamber, Ronda Rousey signs her Monday Night Raw contract. First of all, there's no fanfare. There should have been. He should have been all smiles and giddy. And he should have said, hey, I've got some news about Jason Jordan I'm not happy to deliver, and this would have been a real down day for me, but we just, in the last couple days, secured the rights to Ronda Rousey to be a Raw superstar and smile and be excited and talk about it like, you know, he out-negotiated Shane and Bryan for it. Or if they don't want to take that angle, you can take the other angle and just be like, we're super excited to say you saw her at the Royal Rumble. The next time you get a chance to see her, signing her official contract at the Elimination Chamber when she joins the Raw roster. You don't even have to play off of SmackDown if you don't want to draw that comparison. And it was just thrown out there. It was practically how, you know what? I think they made a bigger deal, Jason, out of Dolph Ziggler's return to SmackDown tomorrow night than they did Ronda Rousey at the Chamber, because they ran two commercials for Dolph. The narration made it out to be this big deal. And Rousey was a passing comment by Angle and then a quick reminder by Michael Cole. This should be a big deal. And like you said, the crowd booed, but they didn't boo like you boo Roman Reigns, where any reaction is a good reaction, as I put in quote marks. They barely reacted, but what you heard were boos. I mean, if I'm WWE, that concerns me.
You know what? Yes, if you're initially bringing her in as a babyface and they go to that tag match, but I mean, ultimately for me, I think Ronda Rousey's got killed. Money written all over her if they want to go down that path. You know, you talk about setting up, you know, baby faces to go against her. I personally think the money is in her being this heel that just, you know, rips on everyone, and then you build up homegrown baby face stars to go up against her. But that's something they could do short term. That's something they could do long term. But that's what I'm excited about as a fan, because I think they're going to be pushing the barrow up their hill, a really steep hill, if they come in and stick with her as a babyface, because I think that resentment will kick in. And, you know, it's funny, Wade, you know, I'm just looking at Ronda Rousey's Twitter page and I'm just looking at her likes. There's two likes for me here that stand out for her. She's liked the comment where Nia Jax goes, cool, she's here. I guess 30 women making history can just be forgotten. Mm-hmm. And the other one from the Bellas, wonder what all the other 30 women kind of thoughts were too. So she's almost acknowledging that there's a bit of resentment in it, and maybe she's keeping that maybe for a storyline purpose. Maybe it is real. Very interesting.
And the natural reaction, and I understand it, is the women were told to say that, and it's to build a storyline. And if it plays out that way, then people go, it was a work all along. I was told by someone who would have no reason to lie about this and also would know that, no, the women kind of, you know, they were mad. Like, they were genuinely thinking that the timing of this and the way it was done took a moment away from them, and that Rousey bigfooted their Royal Rumble moment and Asuka winning. And there were genuine expressions. And Nikki Bella, you know, kind of explained herself. She's like, this isn't anything against Ronda. It's just, we sort of feel like it did. I mean, it wasn't her exact language, but sort of bigfooted our moment. And that didn't come across like an angle. That came across like Nikki hedging a little, going, this isn't against Ronda. It's against the people who chose to put her in that spot at that moment. I think if you're doing a work and management is saying, let's turn this into something, Nikki doesn't go, nothing against Ronda, but Nikki just would say, Ronda stole our moment. You know, like, so I don't know, and we may never for sure know, because there might be different people telling different stories. I understand the natural inclination everybody has. I don't want to be worked, so I'm going to always assume everything is a work. But
you know, Tony Schiavone, that's what he always says. Yeah, he just assumes everything's a work. Just to, you know, and if it's not a work, it's not a work. But at least you don't get fooled.
Yeah, and that was, I mean, it was back in the 90s. I mean, I remember talking to people like, oh, everything's a work, you know. And they tell you, oh, horse racing's a work, NASCAR's a work, politics is a work. Like, they just there's a mentality in wrestling, people in it and people on the outside covering it. Their worst fear is buying into something and then having it being exposed. It's not real. But in this case, I do think those feelings are legit. And I was told the women were not encouraged to say that. That doesn't mean that won't be a story they go with or that they weren't going to go with. But it is interesting. So the crowd reacting to her that way, I don't think is a positive in the sense that, oh, that's a sign that it's working or that Ronda can be a heel. To me, what you want is Ronda getting a mega star reaction out of the gate right now. And
okay,
she's not getting it. You know what I mean? Like, that's what worries me. Is Ronda, when the mere mention of her name should get fans to go crazy for her and or to react like, whoa, that's big news. Oh, I'm excited. There wasn't that buzz in the building at the mention of her name and that she'd be at the chamber. So I don't know. I didn't see that as a positive.
So if we're fast-forwarding ahead to WrestleMania, is it going to be her and a tag team partner versus Triple H and Steph? Because I mean, I know they've talked, you know, we've heard about perhaps it's going to be Ronda versus Braun. I mean, Ronda and Braun versus Triple H and Steph. Now, straight away, when I look at that match, that puts Triple H and Stephanie to me as underdogs. Braun Strowman towers over Triple H, and I know Triple H, you know, the all-conquering lord, but Strowman should squash him. And Stephanie McMahon, I don't care how many goblet squats, hack squats, jump squats, she could do all the squats in the world, and she can train at 1 a.m., 2 a.m., you can't tell me a story that has me believing that Ronda Rousey isn't going to beat her in 10 seconds. So automatically, they're massive underdogs to me, Triple H and Steph. So you're going with Ronda and Rock. I don't know if that's secure. We don't know what The Rock's movie schedule is, if he can be cleared for insurance. So what is the match that you're going to go with? And the other thing is, Stephanie McMahon over the past few weeks has been playing babyface.
Yeah.
I thought she was really good at the Royal Rumble. She put over a lot of the women. You could argue it was more about her, but I thought, you know, just the way she conducted herself and talked about the women, she put over more women in that match than what she has throughout about the 20 years of her career. So now you're going to switch the fans back to Stephanie as being a heel and Ronda, who's come in now as the babyface that the fans know due to social media that all the other women are sort of resenting. And we've been taught that resentment is not that bad because, you know, when you resent someone, you're meant to hold it against them, like when The Rock came back and everything. So to me, it's just very muddled waters, very muddled waters.
It is. And it's fascinating. I mean, I think the situation we're in right now and what they do with Ronda, I hope they have a plan. I hope it's a good plan. I'm told by people who've been around Ronda that the fans are going to love her. That there's a personality, that the weight is off her shoulders, that really bogged down her natural, ebullient nature that she has in a pro wrestling environment. And now that can work against her if she just seems like happy-go-lucky and happy to be there, and it takes that edge off of her character, which is where the money is. But on a personal level, I'm told when the women get to be around her and know her, they're going to love her enthusiasm, how hard she works, how humble she is, and grateful she is to be there, and that will dissipate. And then the question is, can she find that lane to be in as a performer? I hope WWE management has confidence that Ronda can pull off in an unreal situation how she portrayed herself in a real situation, or they have confidence to go a different direction with her and that she can pull that off as a heel or a face. If it's Ronda and The Rock or Ronda and Braun against Hunter and Stephanie, Hunter and Stephanie have to be heels. And I don't put it past them to go heel, even though Stephanie's been babyface and Hunter, even in that scene with Asuka in the video, is a babyface. You know, raising her arm and smiling proudly as the dad of NXT and everything good that happens there. I don't put it past them to go heel for the sake of the match, but winking a nod on social media, wasn't it fun booing us? Weren't we good at playing bad guys?
God.
Yeah, we had that, by the way, in the Ivory video, you know, with Molly Holly going, oh, Ivory played the term she used, not uptight, but she played her character really well, of the prudish, I think was the word. She played the prude really well. I'm like, played a character well? I mean, we're watching Raw. We don't want to talk about how people are playing characters, not during the show itself. But anyway.
So ultimately, are they building? So Asuka, so she's going to be signed to Raw. So obviously, she will be on a collision course with Asuka. You would have to say so, because obviously the smart money is that Asuka is going to walk out as WrestleMania as a champion. That's obviously the big match that they're going to build to. Where are we going with Ronda? Is she squashing people? Because, look, realistically, and you have to look at this from a realistic point of view, if we're talking about true fighters in the ring, Ronda Rousey should be squashing everyone. And I know that's not going to be good for the other women, but, you know, it's going to be hard for me to think that she shouldn't be out there just taking them apart, considering her background.
What about Asuka beats Nia Jax? Because Asuka should stay undefeated for the next year, and then they can do, you know, headline WrestleMania 35 with Asuka versus Ronda Rousey, if all goes well, or co-headline at least. And Nia Jax loses, but puts up a good fight. She throws a fit. After that match, but before the women's chamber, Rousey signing her contract, and Nia comes out and puts up a big fuss. You could do Nia Jax and Rousey, and then Rousey beats Nia at WrestleMania. Does that fit possibly a way things could go, Jason?
It could. I mean, it could definitely, because Nia could talk about how she come in, she stole her moment and all the rest of it. But then you go to WrestleMania, and I worry about that. Well, not worry, but I think the crowd sides with Nia, and they go against Rousey. I honestly believe that. I believe, and, you know, I don't have an issue with that, because, like I said, I think Ronda Rousey as a heel coming out there, cutting a promo, talking about how she wants to take over, and even addressing her two losses in UFC, talking about how she was the biggest drawing star at UFC. She put UFC on her back and everyone abandoned her, but now she's worrying about herself. I mean, I honestly believe if she's got it in her, she has the potential to cut a promo that's combining what CM Punk did and what Hulk Hogan did when he turns heel. And if that's the type of promo she can cut that can get people from the outside world thinking, wait a minute, she's referencing some truths here. She's actually mentioning UFC and all the rest of it. That will get people talking, and that will get people hopefully tuning in to see homegrown babyfaces taking it up to this arrogant know-it-all MMA star who's got a chip on her shoulder, and we want to see the likes of Charlotte or Becky Lynch take it up to her. That's where I believe the money is with her.
I hope she has that promo in her, and I haven't seen evidence of it. And I've seen...
Well, she's called Rowdy Wade. Remember that story that that Stone Cold talks about Dutch Mantel? And Dutch says to him, you know, Steve, what's so stunning about you? And that got Steve thinking. Well, Rowdy, okay, we know you're Ronda Rousey. You like Rowdy Roddy Piper. What is so rowdy about you? You just can't have that nickname because Piper was your favorite wrestler. And you've got two R's with your name.
Yeah.
Exactly. What makes you rowdy? She got to own that name, own the screen, and I think they can go somewhere with her. But we'll see how it plays out.
There's a risk she just comes across as a big mark who thinks this is going to be a breeze. And she's got this, like, you know, half grin in everything she does. And I think he used the analogy with Jason Powell last week. That it could be like Jimmy Fallon on Saturday Night Live, where he's just snickering, like, through everything. And Ronda just can't keep a straight face, and this is just all fun and games. I mean, this is going to be interesting because we don't know. And they're spending a lot of money on her. And this is not Michael Bisping, you know, like where you're like, oh, God, this guy's just or Chael Sonnen, you know, where it's like, oh, this guy's going to be great. It'd be surprising if they weren't great in a pro wrestling environment because they basically cut pro wrestling promos for their UFC fights. With Ronda, that's not what she did. You know, she avoided the media. She was curt with her comments with even UFC personnel most of the time. And there wasn't a lot of range of personality. She was just all effing business, stare straight ahead, march to the ring, one facial expression, boom, boom, boom. Before you know it, she's won or lost last couple times. Mm. So I just don't know what that range is. So I'm fascinated, Jason. I'm fascinated.
I get, you know, for me with Ronda, they've bought her in. They've spending a lot of money on her. What's the reason why you bring these celebrities in? I mean, it's more than a celebrity, this top fighter, to try and draw more eyeballs to the product and to try to get people talking. That's what Mike Tyson did with Stone Cold Steve Austin. There was Austin doing the talking, and it brought a lot of eyeballs in, and away we go. What's the best way that Rousey's going to draw more eyeballs to the product, ultimately leading to more subscriptions and WWE getting a hell of a lot more money for their TV deal? To me, it's making a name for yourself and saying things that people think that are controversial, blurring the lines, being that dominant heel, and up-and-coming baby faces on the WWE roster taking it up to her. That's where I think the money is with her.
Well, if Ronda's going to be a heel, or that's what they want to do, then Nia Jax might get cheered. They might not want that, especially if Nia's losing. What about Ronda Rousey versus Nikki Bella?
Well,
she's a big star.
They could do that,
Nikki complained. you know, and then.
But that, I mean, that, yeah. The match should be over in about a minute, though.
Well, let's do it. I mean, as long as John Cena.
And hurt her big time, you know, I mean, but not for real, but, you know, yeah. Take her out yeah. and send a message that she's come here to hurt the women. She doesn't want to work with them. She's not here to shake hands. She's not here to be friends. She's here to hurt them.
Because.
And, you know, and talk about it that way.
And you can build up Nikki versus Ronda as a big deal because Nikki in the WWE narrative is a big deal. And she's a reality TV star, and you got the Cena connection. Yeah, I mean, there's enough.
A lot of young girls like her. A lot of young girls like yeah. her. She's got that female fan base. Yeah. So now we're dealing with a different dynamic. Before it was sort of like, you know, the fanboys and the, you know, the teenage guys and whatever. But now you're really pulling at the heartstrings of the young females who follow all these women online. They watch the reality TV shows. You know, they feel like they've got a bond with them. You've got this dominant woman from another world coming in there that's going to talk about breaking bones and put them out for real. Now you've got some real emotion.
Absolutely. I want to go to 267. I'm not sure if you still want to be on the show or not because the start is weird. Do you have a question for us? 267? Okay. I'll take that. Oh, let me... Yeah, we just heard you say hello. I think you had pushed one, and then it disappeared. I don't know if you meant to be on the show or not.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah, I meant to be on.
You do want to be on?
Yeah.
Oh, good. Yeah, so go ahead and state your name and where you're calling from. I think it's Philly area.
Yeah, I'm Joe from Philly.
Okay, great. Yeah, Joe, what have you got for us?
Yeah, can you hear me okay?
Yeah, you can speak up a little bit. It's no big deal.
Yeah, I got it. Now, I was just calling about Raw tonight. You know, I was watching the women's match when Absolution came out, and I was a really big fan when Paige came out and all that, and I was really excited to see her back. And then, obviously, the injury, and now she just seems like she's a manager, which is fine for her, but I just feel like the thing with Absolution was just, like, when Paige came back, she was, like, the head of that, and it was like, you know, she was becoming... it was like that tough enough ties, like they said, you know what I mean? She was going to mentor them, and you had Mandy Rose, and you had Sonya Deville, and it was just like, it was kind of really a cool thing. And then all of a sudden, the injury took her out, and it's like, she kind of just looks like she's just there. Like, they don't really mention her as much, and I'm just, my question pretty much is just like, do you think, like, at some point she's going to separate from Absolution, like, maybe manage somebody else, or do you think they're just going to take her out altogether, and it's just, you know, are they just setting her up to just pretty much be taken out completely?
I'm disappointed that they have – it's a good question, Joe, and she is someone I was looking forward to being more in the mix. If she can't wrestle
– Thanks, Wade.
Yeah, absolutely. If she can't wrestle, let her talk. I mean, let her help get over the women that she's supposed to be mentoring. When she was at ringside at the end after the post-match attack and she was making those facial expressions, it was like she is a star. And I made my case after, you know, the news initially broke that, you know, WWE said they're not likely to clear her again based on her situation. And then there's been some indication she's, I wouldn't say in denial, but going to fight it a little bit and, you know, try to get second opinions. But we've heard that before and how that usually works out. I think she could be one of the great managers of this generation. I mean, she has that it factor, and she doesn't have to just manage women, by the way. But I want her to talk, you know, I mean, with the Women's Elimination Chamber coming up, I want her next week to have time to make her case for Mandy Rose and Sonya Deville. Because if you have her just standing around as like a afterthought, you're diminishing what I think is this impact that she can have with a lot of fans who see her as a big deal. So if she can't get in the ring, and they can acknowledge that, she can be a really good spokeswoman for two other wrestlers and build up that Elimination Chamber match. So that's where I think she should be at this point. Jason.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, the camera just loves Paige, and she's got so much energy. She's got so much charisma. It's just a damn shame if she can't wrestle again. And, you know, I was listening to the Fix with you and Todd Martin a couple of weeks ago, and Todd made the point about Paige is that one of his concerns is that she would almost outshine any – type of wrestler that she would be next to, and there is a lot to that.
Yeah,
she would outshine a lot. She just has that star power to her. So, like,
but is
Joe
that
said,
a bad
I mean,
thing? Let me make this point though. Is that a bad thing if she outshines some wrestlers, Jason? Because you want Bobby Heenan outshine some of the wrestlers he managed.
Is it a bad thing according to McMahon and the people behind the scenes that you know they don't want? Well. And so for me, it wouldn't be an issue because I just want to see people who entertain me. I don't care if they wrestle. I just want to be entertained, and she entertains me. But backstage, are they going to think, nah, she's taking a little bit too much off them? Because she even interacts with the crowd at ringside. And you notice that during that match, the crowd were sort of getting it in with her. But in a good way, the crowd like Paige. They recognize she is a star. So, you know, if it's my company, I've got to keep her around. But, you know, I am wondering, you put her with someone, does she take the spotlight away from it and becomes too much about her?
Well, I think the idea with a manager should be, in many cases, not all cases, but in many cases, they complement each other. You know, Nick, the best manager wrestler pairing in history was Nick Bockwinkel and Bobby Heenan. I'll challenge anyone to come up with a better combination. In terms of complementing each other, and each being great at what they are and great in other situations. But together, they're a perfect complement. And Nick was serious and Bobby was outlandish, but you believe that they were together and that they used each other in a mutually beneficial way that fans paid money to try to see them lose and get showing up and one-upped. The other manager dynamic is you need Jimmy Hart to talk for the Earthquake. You know, sometimes you need a manager because somebody else has something going for them, but they're not a total package. And so having that manager outshine them is actually making use of a wrestler who is really valuable, but they're not a complete package. They're not able to cut their own promos. So you put somebody who everybody respects and wants to see do well, and they can tell their story in the ring, but they need a manager to talk for them. And that's where Paige can do that for women and men. And I think they can make that work. I want to find out if Paige can cut a promo for others and seem like she has her heart in it and it doesn't just hurt, you know, to be around it.
Yeah.
You know, there's wrestlers I know, they get injured and they don't want to be around the gym. They don't want to be around other wrestlers when they're hurt. It hurts too much. Daniel Bryan ran into that and talked about it. Joe, do you have anything else for us, by the way, before we move on?
Oh, I just had one more question. Sure. I just wanted to know, I didn't know if you guys covered this earlier, but did you guys hear John Cena drop the hint about Undertaker with the line? I think he said something along the lines of WrestleMania has a factor of bringing a legend back from the dead.
Yes.
And that's all I had to say.
Thanks, Joe. Appreciate you calling. Another good topic there. Let me table that for after the break, but we'll for sure get to it. I'm glad Joe reminded us of that. I want to say one more thing about the women, because I know Kenny had asked us for a prediction on the women's Elimination Chamber match, and I'm talking about Paige cutting a promo next week and making a case for Mandy Rose and Sonya Deville. We have Alexa Bliss and Mickey James in this match, and we had the promo with them tonight, which I like the segment a lot. I want to get your thoughts on that in a second, Jason. Then we have Bayley and Sasha, and they've got their issues with each other. And then we have Mandy and Sonya. So we got those six. Each of them are paired off in a way that suggests they all have their own things that they could be doing. So who ends up winning this match? That's an intriguing question, because I don't have a clear-cut answer of who should come out of this match with the title shot or with the championship and to defend against presumably Asuka. I don't think they're going to have Nia beat her.
Well,
yeah, go ahead, Jason.
I'm just thinking out loud, you know. First of all, the Bayley-Sasha match I thought was a very good match, and it was very surprising to see Bayley actually go over in her hometown. And then, you know what I like a good babyface touch was that when those two, when Bayley and Sasha were sort of approaching each other, looked like they were going to hug or whatever, before Nia Jax actually hit both of them, Bayley pushed Sasha out of the way to try and get Sasha out of the way of harm. Now, it didn't work, but I like the babyface intention.
Yes.
Like, Bayley's face is like, oh my God, you know, and she pushed Sasha out of the way. They both copped it, but it was a nice baby face touch there by Bayley. The way that I see it playing out, Wade, is that I think that Alexa Bliss will escape the cage with the championship. I see Sasha getting pinned by Bayley, but then snapping at Bayley in that elimination chamber, causing a lot of damage, and Alexa escaping due to that with the championship. Now, I also see Alexa maintaining this sort of friendship she has with Mickey James, because she wants to use Mickey to keep Asuka at bay. So leading up to WrestleMania, we could see Mickey James and Asuka in a couple of matches, you know, one-on-one on TV, a bit of a TV feud to lead into the Alexa Bliss-Asuka match. So that's the way I see it playing out myself.
I think that's a legitimate direction it can go. But I like the idea that I don't think people look at this lineup and go, oh, it's just obvious who's going to come out with the title. I think there's Bayley fans who think she could win and take on Asuka. I think there's Banks fans who think that she'll turn heel and come out with the title, and that Asuka will beat her at Mania, and that'll be a good match. I think others can say, no, they'll play, you know, Alexa Bliss is so good on the mic, and she's small, and Asuka can look like a beast against her and take her down. Mandy Rose and Sonya, that's the miss. And heck, Mickie James. I mean, they gave her mic work. I thought that it was a believable segment. I thought the language that the wrestlers were given in their scripts, in their scripts this week, was more natural. There was less of the writers going for clever points and more trying to write in the voice of those who would be speaking the lines. I thought Nia Jax had her best promo yet tonight. It was simple, straightforward, and believable. It felt authentic. And maybe some people disagree with me, but I thought the dynamic between Mickie and Alexa felt genuine. It felt authentic. They spoke in words that I would expect them each to say. I think Mickie is better in this situation than standing in the ring trying to speak in an affected way and falsely generating excitement and emphasis on words. I thought she was really good playing off of Alexa in this segment. So I think Mickie brought herself back into the mix a little bit as someone who would be a really good opponent for Asuka too, if she can come out of this with a sense of some momentum. I don't have the odds high at all for her, but I think she made that case. And then to round out my point, Jason, I think next week Paige should make us believe that Sonya or Mandy are also candidates to actually walk away with a win, because I think matches like this are better when there's, you know, if there's six women, I want to believe five or six could win.
Exactly. But I'm really looking forward to seeing how the Sasha Banks Bayley program plays out, because I think it can get really personal, and I think it is leading to Sasha Banks really snapping on Bayley, and you know that could be a featured match at WrestleMania, a personal grudge match between Bayley and Sasha Banks. Even if it's not for the championship, I think they can really do something special there.
I definitely do too. All right, let's go to a break. We will come back. We're going to start answering email questions. I want to hit the Strowman segment with the bass cello. I want to hit Cena's comment on Undertaker first, and then we'll answer some email questions. So stay tuned. All right, we are back for the mailbag segment of the program, although we do have to address, I want to address Joe's comment from Philly. I guess we don't have to, Jason, but it'd be kind of rude to say we were going to do it and not do it. Joe from Philly brought up the John Cena, the little reference to Undertaker. Was that too overt? Did he go too far with that? Should he have alluded to that? And I bring that up because, one, if it's going to be a surprise for a lot of people, then don't take it away and be cute with the language. And number two, John Cena worked really hard on this show, in that show opening promo and subsequently the announcers, to sell the idea that Cena's, you know, we talk about the women, Cena's a legit candidate to win the Elimination Chamber and go take on Brock Lesnar. Well, if he's dropping hints about Undertaker, does that tell fans, oh, okay, well, I thought for a second there maybe Cena, they changed plans, or, you know, that Cena was going to win. But since he dropped, essentially, dropped Undertaker's name, it sure seems like that's where they're headed. He would not have said that if Undertaker wasn't going to come out of retirement. So now it's going to be Cena-Taker, and now I know Cena's not going to win the Chamber. I wish he had not said that. I don't see what was there to be gained, and I think something was lost. Your take?
Yeah, I understand what you're saying, and when he mentioned that, automatically I thought of The Undertaker, but, you know, I don't know if everyone assumed that. And, you know, I thought he did a good job of talking about how much it means to him to go to WrestleMania. I mean, I thought it was a bit of a stretch that if he doesn't win this match, then he won't be at WrestleMania full stop. I mean, for 15 years he's been going, and they won't find a spot for him on the card. You know, the biggest money draw and the biggest draw for the past 10 years, and they won't find a spot for him at all. You know, I thought that was a bit stupid, but I like the way that he laid down the groundwork that he's going to face, you know, Brock Lesnar. And, you know, depending on how it plays out with The Undertaker, we'll see. I think a lot of people that are savvy to the product would pick up coming back from the dead. I think it was a little nugget he dropped. I wasn't overly concerned about it. But I do think The Undertaker will interfere, but now I'm waiting to see how it's going to happen. The only issue is you have enough savvy fans that start chanting Undertaker at the Chamber. Then it gets annoying. You know what I mean? The people are waiting for it. So that's just one of those things, you know, you might have to deal with.
Yeah. Yeah. No, they are. You touched on what I did not like about the John Cena promo. This idea that if he doesn't win at the Chamber, then he doesn't see a path to WrestleMania. It's so melodramatic. It's not, nobody buys it. It's just silly. You know, I mean, and not that he cares about credibility. I mean, when he got knocked off the ring apron tonight and he flailed his arms like he had just fallen out of an airplane before the parachute got synced up with him, but he was selling it for a comedy troupe. It was like, there's just things he does that are still cornball and over the top, and this was it. There's a lot about this promo that was good. It was passionate. It was kind of in preacher mode. He had that crescendo at the end. And so it's not, by no means was it all bad. But the actual trying to sell the fans on the notion, granted, there's some 8-year-olds who buy this. Oh, my God, if he doesn't win a chamber, he'll be left off of WrestleMania. And then Cole is talking about it later. 13 WrestleManias. Could he miss this one? He can't afford to lose. It's like, nobody over the age of 12 is buying that. You know, they know better. They're shaking their heads at Cena overselling a truly preposterous stance that he's taking to try to melodramatically sell what's at stake in this match. And I just want him to dial it down a little bit and say, this is important to me. I want this. This is the match I want at WrestleMania. I can't imagine one bigger than this. And then you're kind of in a coy way setting up, oh, wait, there might be one as big or bigger.
Yeah, that's the way they could have done it. That would have been a lot better. Having said that, right, let's fast forward. Let's say we do get to John Cena versus The Undertaker. Do you think that match has lost a bit of gravitas?
Why? Why do you say that? Why do you even ask that?
Okay. I know John Cena versus The Undertaker looks good on a banner, looks good on a billboard, two big names. To me, this is a match they should have done at, say, WrestleMania 30. You know, Icon versus Icon, Undertaker's still got his streak. Mm-hmm. Since The Undertaker's lost his streak and he's now lost two matches, I don't know what he achieves going up against John Cena. I don't know what John Cena achieves going up against The Undertaker, because John Cena, since he's come back, I mean, he loses more often than he actually wins. And to me, I feel like they're just going to this match 3 to 4 years too late, when it really could have meant something. Now, if you have The Undertaker defeat John Cena, okay, The Undertaker defeated Cena, but Cena now seems to be putting over everyone. If Cena defeats The Undertaker, now The Undertaker has 3 WrestleMania losses on his record. All of a sudden, that special thing that people link with The Undertaker is not so special anymore. I don't know about the end result. I know it looks good on a banner. I know it looks good on a billboard. But WrestleMania is going to sell out anyway, and it's going to generate a lot of entrants. And to me, unless it is The Undertaker's last match, it's just not a match that really does anything for me at this stage. I think they're 3 to 4 years too late.
I think if they sell this as it could be the last match for the loser.
What are the stakes?
Yeah, if they do that, I think it absolutely is still within its freshness date. The idea of Cena's put some people over. Undertaker has lost a couple times at Mania recently. This is not the streak on the line against Cena. Can he do one more one more year? Nothing like that. The idea that it hasn't happened yet, I mean, you take it 1 year at a time, and if it's not the right year to do it, if other things make more sense, and you look back, and all right, they maybe could have or should have in retrospect done it, but I definitely don't think it's past the point where that will add to the legacy of the WrestleMania brand. The idea that it will sell out anyway was sort of CM Punk's argument, you know, a few years back. Well, why do we need all these stars? WrestleMania is going to sell out, and we can do big business, focus on us. But I think the reason WrestleMania has the aura that it has is because they don't say that ever. They try to make it as big as they can every year. And you add things to it so that you don't spend some of the goodwill in the brand with a mediocre lineup in terms of special star power or dream matches. I think you need to make WrestleMania as big as you can and make it seem like a dream match, even if you think you got a solid lineup without a couple extra paydays going to top guys, because that'll pay dividends on years when you don't have as deep of a lineup. And we've seen WrestleManias like that, where it was the name more than the lineup that sold it. I think Cena Undertaker is important to have on the show if that's what they're doing, and that has been the plan for a while, you know, for weeks now, but not locked in. And, you know, a Jason Jordan injury and reshuffling can change things, as can other factors. But I still like the match a lot, Jason. I know what you're saying. Maybe it would have meant more 3-4 years ago. I still think it means a lot. I think it's a match people think has to happen. It would be a shame if it didn't. And let's give them a chance to sell it to us. You know, we got 2 months after the Elimination Chamber for them to make this, close to it, to make this seem like a really big deal. And then it's going to be up to the writers and Cena and Taker to take full advantage of what there is to be taken advantage of.
That's right. Yeah, I need to know the stakes, though. To me, there has to be something on the line.
I hope there is. I really do. I hope there is. All right, let's Jeremy D. emailed. We'll hit that mailbag here. Okay, Wade, seriously, do they think we are actually interested in watching a, quote, John Cena chases his spot at WrestleMania segment every week? Do they really expect us to believe that if Cena doesn't win the Chamber match, he's not going to have a spot in New Orleans? I mean, they even said it on the broadcast. He's been at 15 Manias in a row. This is such a colossal waste of airtime. It's John F. and Cena. We know he'll be at Mania. Give me a break. Here's, so I read that in part, we just talked about this subject, but to emphasize, Jeremy's thoughts were my thoughts watching it. I think there's a middle ground or an alternative, which is Cena can say, I don't want to end up at WrestleMania this year in a match like SummerSlam last year against Baron Corbin. I showed up, I did my thing, and I moved on, and 4 hours later, nobody remembered I was on the show. I value my legacy. I value what that WrestleMania banner means, cue to pointing to it. I want to be in a big match. It just doesn't – he says, this isn't my ego talking, but I've been to enough of these, and I've been in big matches. I want this to be my biggest night ever. And I can't imagine how that can happen unless I win the Chamber and earn that spot against Brock. Now, fans are going, what you want is fans to go, oh, if John loses, don't worry, John, there's another match we hope you'll have. Undertaker. You know, you want fans to be thinking that and almost telling John what he's setting them up to tell him. To me, that's a better promo. Then you don't have the exasperation of Jeremy, who emailed, and me and you watching it, and a lot of other people going, come on. You know, this is just silly. So there was a way to frame that promo where you're not melodramatic about it. I wish they had done that.
And the other thing you can reference is that, you know, and I think they actually did reference this tonight, where he got embarrassed at SummerSlam a few years ago, and this is his opportunity to avenge that at the biggest stage against Brock Lesnar. He still hasn't gotten over that, where he got dominated.
Yes. Now, you don't want to get people too excited about the match if you're not doing it. That's the other
thing. Exactly. Yeah, so it's a balancing point. Yeah.
It is. All right, so Jeremy also says, and this is finally getting to the Strowman subject that I've been teasing for the bulk of the show here. After seeing the Strowman Elias segment tonight, I'm more convinced than ever that these two guys are the future of the company. Interesting. Elias has gotten this gimmick over better than anyone could have imagined, and he can work in the ring too. And after seeing Strowman show his personality with the song tonight, plus his comedy with Alexa Bliss in the MMC, Mixed Match Challenge, I'm absolutely convinced he's going to be the face of WWE moving forward. He's proven time and time again that he can be more than just a monster who screams his own name and raises his arms. What are your thoughts on these two guys moving forward? And do you think there's any chance they reverse course on the inevitable Reigns-Brock christening at Mania and give that moment to Strowman instead? Now, we covered some of that already, but Jason, what did you think of Strowman with the bass cello breaking out, some country music singing, a little twang to his voice, less of the caveman voice? You know, I am Braun Strowman, I am monster. The staccato tone, he was more human and showed a different side of himself. Is this a necessary step to broaden the range of his character that's indicative, if what they want is to push him as a top-tier guy, that they have to let him show some more range because they need him to do more than just tip over and break things? And was this a step in that right direction, or did they damage him? Was this Steve Austin juggling because he can? It's Braun Strowman doing comedy because he can, but it so contradicts his character that it actually takes away some of the mystique. Your take.
I don't think it took away some of the mystique. And here's the thing, right? First of all, if we're with Braun Strowman versus Brock Lesnar as a backup plan at WrestleMania, if Vince changes course, the problem for me, and I don't know if other people have this problem too, we saw that match a couple of months ago, and I thought it was a disappointing match. And I thought, me personally, I wanted Braun to go over. I wish we hadn't seen that match back in September, October. I wish we had not seen Braun Strowman versus Brock Lesnar in a one-on-one situation. Because at the Royal Rumble, Braun Strowman versus Brock Lesnar, a triple threat versus Kane, if we didn't have that one-on-one match, it'd be a natural progression to get them to one-on-one at WrestleMania because Kane was the one who ate the pinfall. Now we want to see what it's like when these two go head-to-head. But we've already seen that, and to me, that's damaged it a bit for me. Now, as far as Braun Strowman showing this side to him, I have no issue with him showing this side. I find Braun Strowman to be very likable. I think the crowd find him very likable. Here's my thing, though. I hope they've learned from the Big Show. Two things. I don't want to see him cry, and I don't want to see him turn four times in the space of 1 year. Mm-hmm. If Braun Strowman is a babyface, let him be a babyface for a substantial amount of time, then turn him heel. Don't do these turns, and I will put up with these, you know, little comedy segments here and there. At the end of the day, though, he did do a bit of a comedy segment, but he was still vicious with bashing the base over Elias. So he still has that vicious side to him, but now the crowd's along with him. So me personally, I didn't have an issue with it. Stay the course. Don't turn him. Don't have him cry. Still show that vicious side, and I'm okay with it.
Yeah. Yeah, that's where I'm leaning, but I'm a little nervous, but I do think the concern about Braun being too narrow of a character was real. And if he's catching on and fans like this side, it might give them more to work with him. Does it mean they're going to go with Strowman against Brock instead of Reigns? I still don't think so. But this is an interesting turn of events, and it worked well against Elias. What about Elias, Jason? Mike says he's convinced that he's going to be one of the top guys. I mean, a year ago, nobody would have predicted anybody would be saying that ahead of Finn Balor or Shinsuke Nakamura or Bobby Roode, for that matter. Like, people would be saying that about Bobby Roode before Elias, despite the age, you know, the age of Roode. But Elias has done a lot that WWE likes to be done well. But there are people, Bruce Mitchell and Todd Martin among them, who have been critical of, you know, the trolling the crowd, Bruce especially. You know, you're trolling just, you know, this weekend, trolling the crowd to get a reaction. And the crowd, like, chants along with him, but then boos. And then he insults them, but they like to chant along like it's Road Dogg and Billy Gunn all over again. And the character's kind of a mess. And so there's people against that. That said, there is something about the way Elias carries himself that you don't see in everybody. And there's a star power presence that he has that you don't see in anybody. There's a comfort and confidence and swagger to the character that he's playing, even if you don't like trolling the local audience angle that WWE does, that he does really well. There's more there than I think any of us were predicting 6 months or 12 months ago.
Yeah, I mean, first of all, I thought he raided Bray Wyatt for that shirt. I mean, it looked like one of Bray Wyatt's shirts. So I thought he's raided his closet there. But with Elias, he's got a real, yeah, like you said, he's got a real nonchalant type of confidence to him. And I think that's what's won him over with backstage, and especially with the audience, because it's something we can pick up. He looks in control of the segment. Even if the fans interrupt, it doesn't bother him. He always seems in control. And I think that's won him over backstage. And, you know, I think that's won him over with the fans. Also, he's obviously got a very strong look. I think he's credible enough in the ring. How long he goes on with this guitar type of gimmick and singing and everything, that's the big question. So I'm fine with him now. But ultimately, if he wants to be like a permanent main event player, he's got to drop the guitar and evolve that character. Because I think, you know, Bruce and Todd are right. There's only so many times you control the crowd and do that type of thing before it gets a bit tiresome.
And the idea of doing something that's going to get a crowd that you're trying to turn against you, and you know they're going to chant along with you and do what you want, I mean, it makes it seem like the fans aren't taking seriously the emotions that they feel towards them. When it's like, well, we're going to say, walk with Elias and be so proud of ourselves. And, you know, I want Elias to, like, mutter under his breath something demeaning when they, you know, when they do exactly what he says. And what you want is to have that line as a heel and have fans not say it or say something else, like Bobby the Weasel instead of Bobby the Brain, or, you know, like say something that makes him that gets under his skin instead of telling him what he wants to hear. And I'd like them to put their minds to that and figure something out to tweak that. It's yes, it's fun. They say it along with them, but this isn't a babyface act like the New Age Outlaws. And I think it contradicts and undercuts what they're trying to do with him otherwise.
Well, look what happened with Bray Wyatt. I mean, for three, four years, he's got the fireflies, and, you know, people like participating with their phones, but where's it gotten him? I mean, he's been spinning his wheels for a number of years now. You know, I mean, he's just, as Jim Ross always says, it's a babyface act, crowd participation.
Yes.
What are they doing? You don't want Elias going down the same path as well.
Would you take Elias or Bray on your roster right now if you had to pick one?
Ooh. Okay. Well, based on how they've been booked and everything?
Based how you'd book them.
I would still take Bray.
Yeah.
I would still take Bray because I think there's a lot you can do with him as a babyface. I think there's a lot you can do with him. It's a tough one, though. I mean, because you know what? I would need to see more from Elias, you know?
Yeah. I'm leaning a little Elias right now. I think Elias is a little more believable than Bray has shown me in terms of portraying the character that he's portraying. And I think that's a key. But you can make the case Bray's been portrayed poorly and in better hands as a babyface. There's more there than Elias as a face or a heel. But Elias has held his own in the ring, too. It's an interesting question. Some people are going to say, can we cut them both? You know, some people just don't like what they bring. But I, the fact that you can ask that question and pause and think about it, again, is surprising. All right, Mike from Montreal says, hey, wait, why is WWE doing those dumb on-screen graphics during backstage promos? The one tonight with Gallows and Anderson really got to me. The thing I hate most about it is that it basically confirms that promos are heavily scripted. Lame cookie-cutter promos just became lame cookie-cutter promos with dumb graphics. Why won't WWE allow us to enjoy the product while still allowing us to think that some of the things are still controlled by the talent? I hope this made some sense, but I'm pretty annoyed right now. Thanks for all the great content all week, Wade. Take care. Okay. I am very against the on-screen graphics. I don't mind the nerdometer on a segment that is portrayed as pre-taped. I think it's all about context. I can do without the other things that they flashed on the screen and nerds, N-E-R-D-S, exclamation mark, like that kind of thing. Don't need that. But the nerdometer is just an on-screen graphic. I mean, there's graphics of the name of wrestlers under it when they're talking or coming to the ring. So and if it's not portrayed as live or somehow the producer knew how to create a graphic that would splash on the screen for a live promo with something they didn't know they were going to say, that's different than having the nerdometer on standby and Anderson and Gallows saying, hey, get that nerdometer on the screen for us. Like, I can buy into that. So, and Anderson and Gallows are kind of a quirky act. And so I'm more into that than this ill fit of Gable and Benjamin or the Usos with the jail cell. So, like, if they had not done it for anyone, but they made it a thing that Anderson and Gallows have, and as long as they make it seem pre-recorded and post-produced, I'm actually fine with it with them compared to the others, but I'm in general against it being widespread. So that's my take on that. Jason, yours.
No, I agree. And, you know, with the I mean, I wish someone could hack into that and just, you know, start typing random things or just like say, please stop with the graphics or something. I wish someone could figure out a way. That'd be tremendous. But you know what I found funny, right? When Finn Balor was cutting his promo, the way that he was cutting his promo, he was pausing at the right spot. And the way that he was cutting his promo, it was almost like he was cutting it waiting for the graphics to appear, but they didn't. Mm-hmm. So I don't know if they abandoned ship at the last second and thought, no, we've overdone it. Let's just get rid of it. Cut it. This is no good. But I was like, please don't have the graphics come up for Finn Balor. I mean, that's just going to be bad.
Yeah, that'd be great if they made that call mid-show. All right, another email. Andrew G. says, it seems like WWE is going out of its way to avoid the shoving Reigns down our throats. And honestly, it seems like it's caused more harm than good. If Reigns winning the Elimination Chamber and facing Brock Lesnar is truly the outcome we're getting, it seems like there has been little to no groundwork laid for that. It does seem like Reigns has any story. It doesn't seem as if Reigns has any story to get invested in, as opposed to wrestlers like Miz and John Cena, who've given clear mission statements. Strowman has had an incredible year and come close to beating Brock on multiple occasions, and Elias has been on a win streak. Even the guys in the Fatal 5-Way all seem to have more defined stories. I get wanting to try to keep Reigns from getting booed and not pushing him too hard, but is it really helping him? Jason, do you buy the premise, and then is it helping him or not? Do you buy the argument that they aren't pushing him as hard?
Yes, in a way. Although I think Coach is really going out of his way to put over Reigns, and Michael Cole continues to call him the big dog with so much emphasis. And, you know, that just what I love about it, just makes Roman seem so cool. Like when he hears that, I think, okay, I've got to buy this guy's merchandise, the way Cole says it. But look, with Reigns, the emailer is right because of all, you could think of about 4 to 5 other wrestlers which have more of a legitimate story or mission statement behind them that would make sense going up against Lesnar. We haven't heard that from Reigns.
Yeah.
And it's just the way it is. I don't think they, and to be honest, I don't think they're really pushing him down our throats, but you have to go all the way in with him because just say for argument's sake, McMahon says, you know what, to hell with it. I'm going to steer in a different course again. We can't go with Lesnar and Reigns to close the show. What does that tell the savvy fans about McMahon's confidence in Reigns? You know, that even does more damage to him too. look, I'd rather just get it out of the way with, go with Reigns and Lesnar, give Reigns the Universal title, let's get it over and done with, give us something else so we can sink our teeth into at WrestleMania, and then let's move on past WrestleMania. Because if they go on a different course again, I think they'll even do more damage to Reigns.
Yeah. I mean, they gotta pick what they're going to do with Reigns and then pick something that's reasonably marketable and viable and then own it and go with it and do it with confidence. They might just be having them lay low and then, it's the reverse psychology. You know, make the case for everybody else and then Roman seems like the underdog who did it and then you start telling the story for him afterwards so it doesn't seem stale by the time we get to mid-March. But I think he's got a point. In what he said. All right, Frank Sitz from Farmingdale, New York. I'm just getting started on Raw, and I'm already rolling my eyes. I liked the opening segment until Kurt came out following the Miz Taraj onslaught. I would think the babyface GM would tell the Miz the match will take place, but later in the night. That would obviously give Cena time to recover, making it a fair contest, and he could even still ban Curtis and Bo from ringside. Instead, he says he likes the idea, sends the ref out right away, and bans the Miz Taraj to make it look like he's doing something. I'm sorry, but I don't like the logic behind that, because to me, it's sloppy storytelling. And then he asks about the Cena quote about Undertaker. And he says, go VIP, everyone. Thank you, Frank. My thought, too, Jason, the idea of the match happening now after a sneak attack, it makes Angle look like a buffoon. And I know part of the reality of being a GM and the role you play is it helps the booking get from point A to point C in an illogical way just because you need it to. And so you just blame it on the GM being a little, a bit dim-witted. And that's what they're doing here with Angle. They wanted to have a match at the top of the show. They wanted heel heat on Miz. They wanted Cena to make a comeback. So they had Angle do something that came across as unfair. I just worry they didn't even think of it. You know, that they didn't even think about that aspect of it. Why would Kurt allow the match to go on right away and not give Cena time to recover?
Now you're thinking too much, Wade. I mean, that just involves far too much thought there. I mean, but no, anyone would think that. You know what they should do? They should actually troll Cena and the crowd and just have him come out as number two. You know, have Miz and Cena start the match and then that match counted for nothing then.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, let's bring up their email here. Hello, Wade. I write this as I watch the Elias and Braun skit. All I can picture is you going apoplectic. I want to make sure you are okay and haven't done anything drastic. I recently became VIP member, and I'd hate to lose your great commentary and excellent verbiage. I was on the edge. I was looking intently. I was nervous at what
did
I was
watching. Did you have any objects near you, Wade? Did you feel like smashing something yourself? Do you have an instrument?
No.
You picked up your own guitar and smashed it?
No. I my eyes were, I was like, okay, what are they doing? Wait a second, what's that? It was like watching a server pick up too many dishes to bring back to the kitchen. Like, I'm sort of like, okay, this could go really wrong. This could go really, really wrong, but I want to be fair and open-minded as I watch this balancing act. And in the end, I came away, as I expressed, thinking maybe this is okay. It also might be a one-week exception, in which case I don't actually like it as much unless it's unless that's them deciding we didn't like what we heard and the feedback is bad. But having Braun become more of a human being, I mean, look at where Kane started and where he went. It wasn't a top guy, but, sometimes you let characters evolve. And, the reality is this is not a show where Braun can play that monster who appears on TV on occasion and roars and fans are excited to see him, and Andre the Giant or Undertaker special attraction role. He's a full-time every week guy. And if they don't have him as someone who has a vocabulary and talks a lot, then he's tipping things over. But there's only so much of that you can do before it becomes a cliche. So, you'd like there to be an explanation or, some evolution where it makes sense. But if it can't be done and you just need to get to the point that he can cut longer promos and be a more multifaceted personality, sometimes it's pro wrestling and you just have to make that leap and say, "This we're better off here, let's just jump there and not try to explain it in a lame way." And the Elias might be the transition point, and that's all we go with, and now Braun becomes more articulate.
And you notice that, he's belting Elias, and the announcers are sort of laughing about it. They got a smile on their face, and you mentioned this point before. It all depends on who Braun's beating up. If he's beating up true main eventers, then it's serious. But if he's beating up people like Elias and other ones, it's all fun and games. Oh, look at that. He might not even make it. They make a bit of a joke out of it.
Yeah. So, well, I mean, do you think this is the start of a different version of Braun Strowman than we've seen? I mean, do you think that this is going to be something that we see now for forever, or is this pulling away for the sake of the Elias skit and the convenience of the instrument and singing a little, but now he goes back to roar, I'm a monster?
Look, to be honest, Wade, I don't mind. First week what I saw, I didn't mind it. I'm interested to see where they go with it. So I'm going to reserve judgment and see what they do. I don't want to be seeing this too often. You know, he becomes too comedic and he goes down the path of the Big Show. You know, like I said, he's still got, as long as he's still showing that fire and the way that he can dominate and he's still serious and he can still cause damage, I don't think it's going to do too much to his character. I think it's going to make him more likable, maybe to a different range of people, and they could jump on board with him. And at the end of the day, if that's what the WWE feel they need to do for them to feel comfortable to put him at that next level and push him as a top babyface, then I'm for it then.
All right, one more email. VIP member Ted from Sacramento. One of the reasons I think Miz has gotten over is he's portrayed as smarter than most wrestlers. So with that in mind, why wouldn't Miz accept the John Cena match stipulation tonight? It seemed lazy and counterproductive booking. They tried to build that in by having Miz think he had this advantage where he could get this statement win against John Cena. Maybe Cena gets beat down early in the match and Miz enters later. So that works to his advantage. He thought he had a sure win because of what Bowen Curtis did. He just hit his move and win. I think there's enough there that you can believe that Miz thought there was a benefit to Cena losing, and with a sneak attack, he had him where he wanted him, so let me do it. And I think part of being a heel is having a master plan but also getting overconfident. And so I was okay with that aspect of it, but I get where Ted is coming from. Where are you on this, Jason?
Yeah, with The Miz, I mean, when he came out and he talked about how he was going to face Brock Lesnar and John Cena sort of cut him off and laughed about it, I got to admit, that's what I think too, because, you know, I enjoy The Miz. I think he's great, but I do have a hard time accepting him in the same ring as Brock Lesnar. Mm-hmm. There's other wrestlers that I don't have a hard time with, but with The Miz, I just do. You know what I mean? Intercontinental champion, United States champion, great. But that answer that he gave, that he's willing to go to places other wrestlers aren't, and that he knows what he's doing, and he's done this all these. I thought that was a very good comeback. I still don't buy it if it was him and Lesnar, but I thought he handled himself really well, and it gave me something that I could semi-believe in.
I say that all the time. Give fans a story to believe in, and they'll buy it. They just want a story they can believe in, and then they'll do it. They'll believe in it if you give them something to believe in, but you have to give them something to believe in, but trust that they want that, and they will.
Yeah, but Miz versus Brock Lesnar, a one-on-one matchup, you know, Brock Lesnar beats him in 10 seconds as far as I'm concerned.
I know.
But crafty Miz, willing to do whatever. He's got a couple of other guys that could distract him. You don't know what he could do. That, you know, that I can sort of buy. Wait, I wanted to bring up the Roman Reigns-Sheamus match. I thought that was a very good match, and I thought it did a good job of reestablishing Sheamus. And I thought, you know, Michael Cole or someone made the argument that Sheamus has been an underrated performer, and I think there's something to be said about that. I think he had a really good year with Cesaro. He's very reliable. He always has good matches, whether it's a small or a big guy. And what I liked about this, once again, Roman Reigns winning without the big setup. He won with the spear that sort of came out of nowhere, but it was enough for the win. And I like that it could happen at any particular time, and I thought they did a really good job giving Sheamus a really strong offense. So I thought it was a very good match for both of them.
I agree. I thought it was interesting and noteworthy that they're talking about, you know, when Sheamus's career is over, he'll go down as underrated. Are they, you know, portending an announcement because of some issues that Seth might be having with his neck that he might end up have to cut short or cut back his career? Or was this just building him up because he's against Reigns and they want it to seem like, you know, if Reigns struggles to beat him and it takes 15 minutes, that there was a good reason for it? I'm not sure, but it was over. But yeah, it's a good match. And I do think Reigns is getting less video game like by a certain notable percentage. He's seeming a little more human. I like when he looks out to the crowd and makes eye contact with the fans and seems like he's not in his own world, just going through the motions. So there's some improvement there. And, I mean, Sheamus is good, and he's a good opponent for Reigns. And it's a hard-hitting match. Anytime you're in the ring with Sheamus, you got to be prepared to be in a stiff match because that's his nature.
And no cruiserweight wrestlers tonight, I noticed.
Good point. Yeah. I wonder if that's going to be a thing, if 205 Live just isn't put in a losing situation now, and instead it's just a Tuesday night show. But they didn't even promote it.
Yeah, and the other thing is, you know, more women's segments we're seeing. I mean, last week we saw four segments. I'm not sure what Bayley and Sasha, they had a two-segment match, didn't they? You know, we saw with the Mandy Rose match and with her match, you know, we're seeing more focus on the women. And, you know, four segments for the women is roughly an hour, you know, when you think about it.
Yep.
With the ads and everything. So maybe WWE are, you know, producing their shows like, you know, we're going to consistently give these women 3 to 4 segments. That takes up an hour. Yep. We fill out the rest of the 2 hours with the quote unquote heavyweights, and that's our show for us. And we leave the 205 Live guys on their particular program. And if they go down that path, I don't have an issue with that.
I don't either. I mean, I thought the cruiserweights, it made more sense to have them on SmackDown to set up, you know, a match that would start, you know, that take place later, you know, there's that more immediacy to get the audience to carry over. But I know they think in the 3 hours of Raw, we have time to fill. But I mean, now with the women and the growth of that division, they don't need the cruiserweights to fill out spots on Raw. So
no, they just need to recruit a few more women on Raw, you know, four to five. And they'll have a very strong division, and they could easily fill out, you know, 4 to 5 segments per week on Raw.
Jason, we did hear from our on-site correspondent. Do you have 5-10 minutes to stick around and we can bring him on to talk about the show tonight?
Yeah, for sure.
Okay, yep. Cool. So stand by. All right, we are now joined by Sean Tevis. I even have my phonetic spelling from the last time you were on the show. Did I get it right?
Perfect. Oh, yeah.
Okay,
yeah,
good.
And most people get it wrong, so thank you.
Absolutely. Sean, thanks for talking to us today. Want to get your thoughts on the show. Let's just cover attendance. How full was the building compared to SmackDown last summer when you went?
It was pretty full. I'd say 90%, 95%.
And how would you rank the enthusiasm of the fans on this night overall compared to what you experience at other shows or what you think you pick up on from TV in other cities?
It was pretty positive. I was down in the I was down on the floor for the first time, actually, so got a little more of the people that, you know, pay more because they're more excited to see it, you know.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of it was good. It was good crowd all around.
And what kind of response? Let's just get this out of the way. We always got to ask: did Roman Reigns get? And how did that compare to other top baby faces on the show?
He got booed. A lot of boos for him. Actually, one guy in front of me was dressed like Roman Reigns, had the long black hair and everything, so he was really excited. But I'd say overall, he got a lot of boos. I did notice, you know, like how it has been the last few weeks. You know, at first, of course, everyone was quick to jump on him, and then, you know, everyone kind of lightened up as the night went on. But it's still pretty booey, you know.
How do you rank the top babyface responses? Who was in that top tier?
Strowman. Strowman was number one. When Finn came out for the last match, he had a pretty good response. I'd say probably Strowman won.
Seth, Bailey.
Probably Seth Rollins, too. Yeah, Seth, too. Yeah, Bailey, of course. Bailey got the big pop because, you know, she's the hometown girl, you know.
Did she get a pop? Were you guys legitimately surprised that she won her match? Were you all expecting for her not to go over in her hometown? How did that come across?
Yeah. Yeah, I was expecting for her to lose. But, no, she won, and everyone was up on their feet when she won, and everyone was really excited. You know, and everyone was really bummed about Nia Jax, you know, but.
And what happened with the main event? What happened with the main event? What happened as we went off air? Because as we went off air, the referee was holding both Seth Rollins and Finn Balor's hand. How did that come across in the arena, and what did they do after that?
Yeah, I was going to ask you when it stopped for you guys. they pretty much just, like, the ref was like, well, I guess both you guys won. And they kind of just, Seth and Finn kind of just argued in the ring for a sec. And then Finn just kind of went like, you know, screw it, like put his hands up and was just like, screw it. And they just walked out of the ring. It was nothing. They didn't come to blows or anything like that.
But nothing resolved.
No. It's still open. I figured it'll just come to a, you know, one-on-one match next week.
What about
Oh, I was just going to say, but they didn't like make an announcement like, oh, I guess we're going to have to settle this next week or anything like that. It just kind of was like, I guess we're going to have to wait. You know, that's what I thought, you know.
What about the reaction? Wade and I talked about this earlier with Ronda Rousey.
Yeah. When Kurt Angle mentioned her, there just wasn't – when Kurt Angle said, you know, she'll be at a contract signing at the Chamber, not much of a response and a few scattered boos. It just didn't seem like fans either heard what he said or felt Ronda was a big deal. What was your take?
We heard it. I think it's kind of I know personally I'm waiting to see what she actually does when she gets here for me to, you know, be all excited about her. I mean, it's cool, but – I definitely think I think there's a lot of we'll see what happens when she gets here type thing. But yeah, there definitely was boos. I definitely heard, you know, the kind of the section to the right of me was kind of booing a lot for it. But you know, that's kind of my personal take on it is that like it's kind of a wait and see thing. But yeah, no, I did notice that it wasn't as loud as I was expecting it to be. I mean, of course, there was, you know, cheers and stuff, but not as intense as I thought it might be.
What was the dark match before the show went on the air? Was there more than one?
Let me try and see. I didn't think it was going to be on the show, so I didn't take notes. Cedric, Alexander, and Daivari, and Cedric went over him and Kurt Hawkins and Heath Slater went over.
Oh, okay. All right. And then was there any advertised main event and did it take place? You know, in terms of advertising, it helps sell tickets. Yeah, dark match.
The dark match, I didn't see any advertising. My wife bought me my ticket for Christmas, so I didn't, you know, get any ads about it or anything like that. But after, you know, the dark match, they did have two dark matches, and one was Asuka versus Alexa Bliss for the championship, and of course that ended in disqualification by Nia running in the ring and starting to pound on both of them, and then why am I drawing a blank on this? Oh, Sasha and Bailey came back out and saved the day, and then they all hugged, and it was a big cheer and all that stuff.
What was there?
And then after.
Oh, no, go ahead. I'm sorry.
Yeah, go ahead.
No, go ahead. I interrupted.
Oh, I was just going to say after that, The Miz came back out and was like, this isn't fair. I deserve another chance at this. You know, he's like, I want John Cena to come back out here. But instead, Braun Strowman came out, and Miz was like, "Let's make this a 3-on-1 handicap match and see if you can beat me now," and all this stuff. And then Braun came out and just, you know, it was like a 2-minute squash match. He just came out there and power slammed all three of them, and then laid them all on top of each other and pinned it, and won.
Okay, interesting. Jason, anything you want to add?
No, I was just going to say, even if it's 3-on-1 against Braun Strowman, the handicap match is in favor of Braun Strowman, I would think. Any particular reactions that surprised you, Sean? Like people you thought would get a strong babyface reaction but got a heel reaction and vice versa?
I was expecting everyone to be excited and everyone was jumping on their feet when he came back out and all that stuff.
Okay, but in general, like you know, like was there you know like a general baby face that got a heel reaction or didn't get much of a reaction, and a heel you thought would get a bit more heat?
Well, he's a baby face. I think he's over as a baby face. You know,
did you hear?
Especially now that they're
Did you hear the CM Punk chant? Because I'm trying to remember what segment I heard that in. Was it the main event?
Yes, I heard that.
There was one. I do believe it was during the main event. It was very, very small.
Yeah.
It was. I actually think it was started by some guys that were a few rows behind me that, you know, definitely had a few and were just, you know, trying to antagonize the wrestlers in the ring. But it didn't go any louder. It wasn't like a whole arena chant or anything. It was just a handful of people.
Yeah. Okay. Anything else noteworthy at all from your experience? Any other observations or anything you'd want to share with the listeners?
Well, I got to see Asuka wrestle. I didn't think I was going to. Because when I went to Raw last time, she hadn't debuted yet. So all I saw was the vignette package on her. So it was cool to see her finally see her live wrestle. And I was seven rows away from the ring, which is usually I'm up in the nosebleed. So that was pretty cool.
Now, do you know what your wife paid, or is that?
Yeah, it's written on the ticket. It was $95 before, fees and all that stuff.
Yeah.
Let me check the ticket. Yeah, $95 plus $16.90 for all the fees and stuff.
Having experienced that spot, would you want to spend that kind of money again if it wasn't a gift to experience that instead of the nosebleeds? Is it worth that upgrade in pricing now that you've been there?
Yes, definitely.
Yeah.
Like I said, it was like the fans around me weren't just like, oh, hey, let's spend, you know, $20, $25 and go to see some wrestling. You know, it was like people are like, no, I'm paying some good money because I love this, you know what I mean? So it was really fun.
Cool. Well, Sean, thanks so much. Glad we were able to hook up with you here.
Cool. Thanks, Wade.
Absolutely.
Appreciate it.
All right, cool. I'm glad we were able to squeeze in a talk with our on-site correspondent, get a little flavor for what happened after the show went off the air. That answered that question and some details on considerable content in terms of a dark match and the angle afterwards with Miz. So appreciate Sean for doing that. If you're attending a future episode of Raw or SmackDown, drop me a line, WadeKellerPodcast@pwtorch.com. Jason, as always, a pleasure talking with you. Good conversation, and really appreciate your time and some good questions and some good analysis of what we saw tonight.
Yeah, thanks, Wade. Just a couple of more points I just wanted to bring up quickly. What I really liked in the main event is they actually teased that suplex powerbomb combination on the top rope early in the match, but Bray Wyatt broke it up. And then they went to it again, and that ended up being the finish, and Bray Wyatt was the one who ate the finisher. So I like when they tease a spot, they don't do it, they go back to it, and it led to an even bigger spot. So I like that detail. And just a couple of more things, Wade. I mentioned this at the beginning. It's been a big week for us here in Perth. A couple of days ago, had the UFC. We had UFC for the first time, and I enjoyed the main events there between Rockhold and Romero. And next week, we've got New Japan coming to Australia for the first time, so really looking forward to sampling that product up close and personal.
I hope we can hear from you on your experience at the New Japan show.
Really looking forward to it.
Yeah, excellent. Well, Jason, thanks so much. We've got to do this again soon. I think our listeners agree, and we will talk to you down the line.
Thanks, Wade. All the best to you and all the best to the listeners.
So we'll be by tomorrow with our post-SmackDown show right here on the red brand of the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show. And then Thursday on our Thursday flagship at Podcast One, it'll be Bruce Mitchell, Torch senior columnist, joining me for the flagship edition of the program. It's been a long time since Bruce has been on the flagship. I look forward to discussing all things pro wrestling with him. If you have questions for Bruce and me for the Thursday flagship, you can send those questions to WadeKellerPodcast@pwtorch.com. And then Friday, it's going to be part two of my interview with Nick Aldis, a.k.a. Magnus, former TNA champ, current NWA World Heavyweight Champion. They announced earlier today that James Ellsworth will be challenging Nick Aldis on his Aldis Crusade, defending the NWA title about 20 times in 60 days on a bunch of continents. So that was in the news. You can find out more details and see the video for the setup at pwtorch.com. Part two of that interview coming up this Friday. So four shows a week on two separate feeds. Our post shows after Raw and SmackDown are on this red feed. Thanks for finding us and subscribing. But be sure to switch over to the blue feed and catch up if you missed last week's interview with Nick Aldis, along with the mailbag segment with Jason Powell and the Thursday flagship featured about an hour to an hour and a half of Jason Powell and I hitting on the big topics of the week. So two good shows late last week. If you missed them, be sure to check that out on the Blue Brand. You can find our shows. Just search Wade Keller on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen to pro wrestling podcasts. If you're craving ad-free and plug-free versions of this show, along with the 7 days a week PW Torch livecast lineup. And by the way, on Tuesday this week, today for most of you, Pat McNeil is going to have former WCW ring announcer Dave Penzer on, and they're going to talk about the top seven moments in Monday Nitro history. So you can join them live, and you can also download the show Tuesday night. That's the new PW Torch livecast, the newest addition to the PW Torch livecast lineup. So if you want ad-free versions of all those shows, plus VIP exclusives, which include the post-pay-per-view roundtables, the Everyday Wade Keller Hotline, The Fix with Todd Martin, the Bruce Mitchell audio show, and also we debuted our New Japan post-pay-per-view roundtable format, Sean Radican, Todd Martin, and Dan Kuster analyzing this weekend's New Japan event that live-streamed on New Japan's streaming service. They approached an hour of in-depth analysis of that show, a new commitment that we have to this year to doing more coverage in New Japan. And the roundtable this weekend, a really good indicator of that. We have more cool news to come on that front. So if you want to get everything that we do, go VIP. PWTorch.com/goVIP rates as little as $8.25 per month. To become a VIP member, that's the average rate if you buy an annual subscription. And you can also pay $9.99 a month to go month by month. Full details on all the podcasts and all the archives and all the ad-free benefits. Not just the ad-free podcasts like this one, but also the ad-free websites that are on desktop and mobile. So check out full details, pwtorch.com/goVIP. Support us when you shop Amazon. Go to pwtorch.com/Amazon. And then click on the Amazon logo and shop as you planned, but we get a commission. And if you are not visiting pwtorch.com every day, be sure to make that part of your routine. We'll keep you up to date on what's going on in the world of wrestling. You can read my reports on Raw and SmackDown. We've got reports on just about every wrestling TV show out there. Breaking news, flashbacks. In fact, on Monday, we put up flashbacks of Raw reports from 5 years ago, 10 years ago, and 15 years ago. In-depth reports on those shows. So it's kind of fun to look back at the anniversary dates of what is going on, or what was going on 5, 10, and 15 years ago. Some great editorial commentaries and editorials and special features also on pwtorch.com. So if you're not checking that out, bookmark it, create a home screen button on your phone, and check it out on your laptop, pwtorch.com. All right, that will do it for me for today. Thanks to Jason from Australia. Thanks to our callers. Thanks to our correspondent on site. And until tomorrow, Wade Keller, signing off.